And welcome to the Glacially Musical Podcast. It is beer, metal, and swearing. Of course, I am Nick Cameron, and I am joined by my good friend, I think, a man who I would have up until recently questioned whether or not he existed. Perhaps he was mythical, perhaps he was elliptical, perhaps he was running on the treadmill. Keefe Chupacabra, how we doing today, buddy?
People always ask me if I know Tyler Durden. I know this because Tyler knows this. How come figments are only of your imagination and there's not other kinds of figments? Just some thoughts to start the episode. How are you today, sir?
I have no idea what you're talking about. Do me a favor and give me a little more gain on your side.
Sure, I actually know. Talk amongst yourself for a second while I do
All
some
right,
digging.
I will get going. For anybody who has never been here before, thank you for joining us for the first episode of Slayer, because you can't just say Slayer. Slayer. And also, while you're listening to this, you should be carving Slayer into your forearm right now. We'll get there. So today's first episode of Slayer, of course, here is how we typically do this. We have a greeting, beer check, vinyl check, news check, shirt check, meat of the episode. Meat of the episode, of course, is Slayer's debut record. Hella wait, show no mercy. Hella was show no mercy. Hella show no mercy. That's right. That's what they call it. I'm gonna go ahead and start off with my beer of the week. This is from Tighthead Brewing Company. I have no idea where it comes from. I got this at the Dogwood Social Club liquor store next to the Dogwood Social Club at my daughter's 13th birthday party. Just for the record, I am mentioning my daughter and how awesome she is. So if anybody asks any of you if I mentioned her, yes, I did. This is a delightful 7.5% IPA. Drinking this out of my Blues 40th anniversary glass.
Not out of the Stanley Cup.
I was told you can only drink beer out of it once.
Apparently, I see it right behind you. For those not who didn't tune in last week for our episode on Dolly Parton, Nick drank his beer out of a replica Stanley Cup that was 3D printed. It was pretty phenomenal.
And I did not tell Keefe it was coming. I kept that
No,
very, very secret, set it up on camera so he couldn't even see it
it was a
till I
very
lifted it.
It was a very good surprise. Belated happy birthday to the child. You officially went from a pre-nager to a teenager. Bless your heart and Godspeed and good luck. My non-beer check is a seltzer check, as usual now, and I'm having Liquid Death Mango Chainsaw. Not a sponsor of the show, but an affiliate partner of Ghost Cult Mag. Enjoy.
If I may, murder your thirst.
Exactly. Pop. And cheers.
Cheers, my friend. All right, quick vinyl check this week. I'm going to point out my vinyl check this week may seem prescient, may seem preternatural, may seem psychic. When you see this one, you're going to be like, oh my God, I cannot believe we're doing Slayer when you are checking The Last Splash by the Breeders. Because it's got Cannonball, which is totally metal. Got this on Amazon during. It's already been cleaned and wiped up and all that good stuff. This is a 180 gram repress. This is not an OG pressing. Came with a nice inner sleeve with all the lyrics and all the business, which I will say the packaging on this record is far better than the packaging on this album I got when it was new on CD. Oh, there's another one down here. Hang on. This week I am checking one of the greatest thrash metal live records of all time, possibly the first live metal official. The first official thrash metal live record. It is a band when they were celebrating their 10th anniversary, going out on the road, playing small arenas, playing what looks like on the back a rodeo rink. Of course, that is Slayer, Decade of Aggression. Got this also on Amazon. It has been on up and down for a long time. It is not a gatefold. This came in the Mylar. This has been, like I said, it's been on Amazon for a while. It's the value, the price has gone up and down, and like a dumbass, I passed on it when it was $25. So when it dropped down to $27, I'm like, here you go. Here's my Amazon Chase credit credit card, get it in the mail.
Nice work.
I think the total of these was about $60 for the pair.
Oh, all right. That's not bad. I was going to say, I appreciate the Deaf American label on the Decade of Aggression, the original old school label of that album. So the CD looks like that. The old school albums look like that. And I saw Breeders in September at Riot Fest in Chicago. And while Breeders were on stage playing Last Splash, I was interviewing Jamie Morgan of Code Orange, who was like, oh, man, this song is awesome. I was like, it is awesome. I love the Breeders. That's great.
One of my absolute favorite State sketches had this song in it. But unfortunately, when they re-released everything on DVD, when they released the entire series, they could not get the licensing to the music anymore. So it did not. It's the episode where Michael Ian Black is trying to hit on women in a library while not wearing pants. So as he gets turned down by three women in a row, I forget his name, but he was actually the one that started the whole business, says, why don't you try wearing pants? And then they pan down and he's in a giant pair of tidy whities with his sweater vest and button up shirt tucked in. And then he goes off to a department store and Carrie Kenny is there and he goes, excuse me, I'm looking for, and she interrupts, pants. And then they play Cannonball. He buys pants. He picks up the lady and walks off. The punchline was, the other guy says, that's good for him, but I'm still alone. And Carrie Kenny walks up and says, why don't you try taking your own advice? And you, oh, I'm sorry. It was Ben Garant that played the other character. You look and they pan down to Ben and he is wearing a golden sequined thong. And then they're going arm in arm walking down the street. I yield my time.
Nick's explanation of a television comedy sketch. Everybody. Good times. Good times. So I have a vinyl check, my first vinyl purchase of 2024. This is a surprise one. I wasn't really planning on getting it. A brand new one or a very good plus or a mint. We did an episode where we discussed all those ratings and gradings. Maybe we'll do another one. We'll do one every year. Some kind of vinyloscopy thing like you used to do. But this goes sometimes for hundreds.
That would be a good guest episode.
If we had a guest who was like, you know, interested in it and qualified to talk about it and stuff. But so this goes for hundreds of dollars if you have a brand new one. I did, but I saw sort of a used, not great one for like $10. So I had to jump on it. I was like, okay, I have to get this. And this is, because I'm a freak for this band, this is the 7-inch from the soundtrack to The Legend of Billy Jack. Do you know what song this represents? What this is about? Do you know the band?
No, but my best friend, the minister, his favorite movie is Billy Jack, and he has been trying to get me to watch it for 25 years now. We've actually had bet after bet after bet, and he keeps losing them. Mm-hmm. And now I just won't watch it.
It was poorly remade a few years ago, I think with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Or maybe that's Walking Tall. They're similar movies.
That was Walking Tall.
Outsider guy comes to a town and kicks a lot of ass. The Legend of Billy Jack, soundtrack, the hit song, they did not write, but the hit song One Tin Soldier by the band Coven, that you know I am an obsessive Jinx Dawson and Coven fan. I got to interview Jinx for Ghost Cult. It's our second most watched interview of all time on our channel at almost 50,000 views in a few years. It was right before the pandemic. It is back with the theme song to Billy Jack. This is the original RCA 7-inch sleeve. The label for Warner Brothers, which also is, I don't know, I guess maybe this is the original sleeve, maybe it's not. But, and it's pretty dirty because I just took it out of the box, literally opened it right before the show. Burbank, the home of Warner Brothers. This is a dusty boy. I'm going to have to clean this very well. But it kind of doesn't look scratched up. It's just dirty, dusty, from probably never being played. And I'm stoked to own this. It's just purely to own this, to have it. I am going to listen to it. I have One Tin Soldier on something, another Coven, like a Coven box set. But it's kind of interesting because the song is morally ambiguous, and then Coven becomes this big satanic panic band, As you know, we don't have to spend a whole episode on how Coven predated Black Sabbath, has a song Black Sabbath, has a bassist Ozzy Osbourne, all before Black Sabbath became a thing.
We don't have to, but you are.
But I just did. So anyway, that's my vinyl check, man. That's my first purchase of the year, $10.
Very nice. And we'll discuss this when we get to it, because it's I've been gorging at the trough of I've been gorging, and so I got plenty. In fact, I've got albums that don't fit in the pile, so they're actually in the up next, even though they're not up next. They've been listened to multiple times, but one of the ones I got that I'll be checking probably in about 3 weeks. That's how far ahead I am. I'm not usually that far ahead. I got it on Discogs at about $25-$30 under market value. It is missing the inner sleeve, and that is fine. I was able to clean it up from a good plus and do an EX minus. He just had never cleaned it. It smells like a basement, but when you see what it is, you would deal with it smelling like a basement because I got it for $10. And I will say this, it is a previous podcast subject, one of our first series, actually. So I will leave it at that. My shirt check this week is from Super 70 Sports. The Ice Cube inspired. Messed around and got a triple-double with a 6-4 Malibu on the front.
Damn right it was a good day.
Didn't even have to use my...
I read the lights of the Goodyear blimp and it said, Nick Cameron's a pimp. I just want to remind everybody that if you want to see Nick's ongoing vinyl progress and purchases, just follow his Instagram for some vinyl porn.
I actually stopped posting old records on my Instagram now. So because I'm going so much slower, I don't have the time to really pump it. I'm basically only posting new records. So you'll actually be following what I buy as I buy them. But right now I'm buying... God, 3 to 4 a week. So, and I'm back. I have pictures backed up to September. So I haven't even gotten to when you were here.
No kidding. Well, you know what? I think you did check the one I bought you though.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was a fun one. And we should review that at some point, and I'm just waiting to buy mine. My shirt check, just to get it out of the way so I don't skip myself, is Cave-In. You can't really see the whole design, but it's this cool heart. I got the old school shirt rotation in, refreshed some older things. Nothing really new right now. That is my shirt check. It is mine and mine alone.
My news check this week, trying to keep it short. There hasn't been any big movement in the big bands that I have heard of. Keefe pointed out to me that Clouds Taste Satanic have dropped pre-orders, which pre-orders went live last week on their latest record, and I do not recall the name of it because I am a tool. So friend of the show Steve Scavuzzo, I apologize that I did not remember that your new record is called 79 AE, but maybe I already pre-ordered it, which I did.
Nice work. Speaking of a previous topic and maybe a future band, Haunt announced their new album, which I also don't remember the name of. They're having a $5 sale right now on their website. I don't know a band as prolific and as high quality as Haunt in American metal right now. Clouds Taste Satanic would be another. And maybe we can get Steve on as a guest. That would be cool. I would love to interview Steve about that record anyway for Ghost Cult, but maybe we can get him on here.
I've had him on twice.
Nice. Well,
I had him on at the very beginning, and I had him on about 5 months ago on the Department of Metal Antiquities.
Ah, I see. No pressure, no pressure. Not too much metal news. You know, we're getting into the Super Bowl, Chiefs and 49ers, so it's time for a lot of commercials and movie trailers with music in it. And so Despicable Me has a new sequel coming out, like the fourth one. I've never really watched these things. Minions, Despicable Me. The trailer commercial featured both Guns N' Roses and Dragon Force. Hard to believe, but true.
And what I love about Dragon Force is that they know they're a joke, and they're in on it.
Sort of.
Let me rephrase. They know they're telling a joke. They're obviously, the band by themselves is no joke. Those guys are amazing. Mm-hmm. I have several of their albums. Fortunately, have never seen them, still want to. They haven't come back since the pandemic, but they're like Lords of the Trident. They're in on the joke. You know, it's not serious. It is very unserious, fun metal, which a lot of serious metalheads laugh at.
Yeah, I'm okay on the fun part of metal. We don't always have to be so serious. I just think I'm bored of them. I was bored of them watching them live 10 years ago. I was like, they didn't even have a drummer who could perform the songs live. It was like a
Well,
challenge.
the thing
But
is you just don't listen to them all the time.
that's also true. I mean, I know people who only listen to Dragon Force and are sad there are no other bands as ridiculous as Dragon Force. Maybe Firewind.
No.
Dream Theater, perhaps.
Yeah, definitely Dream Theater. Unicorns are fun when there's only a couple of them.
That's
Unicorns
true.
are not like the NHL outdoor game, Gary Bettman. One was great, now we have eight.
Yeah, it's too many. Gary Bettman somehow still has a job. I'm not sure how come.
He has a job because every year the NHL makes more money than the previous year.
That may be.
That's why.
That may be. But here, so there's that news, and then Jason Momoa, friend of the show, not really, but maybe someday. Jason
He
Momoa,
was in my old neighborhood very recently, so definitely friend of the show.
infamous movie star and television star of things like the terrible new Aquaman movie, the Fast and Furious franchise I've only seen one of because I can't stand that dumb shit, or Game of Thrones. He has a brand new series on HBO called On the Roam, which seems like a very high quality, expensive advertisement for his clothing brand, also named On the Roam. But it is essentially things that inspire him, friends of his journey as a creative person, things he digs, heavy metal, motorcycles, tattooing, his Polynesian background. And so the theme song for On the Roam is Nick's least favorite song we saw together when we saw Metallica twice
Oh, I
just
thought you were going to
recently.
say Sober by Tool.
That is not correct. Do not insult Tool again in my presence or on this
I
podcast.
did not insult Tool. I have never insulted Tool.
You have.
I have said I don't enjoy Tool.
Oh. The theme song to On the Roam is two on the nose. It is Wherever I May Roam by Metallica, Nick's least favorite song on the Black Album.
No, it is not. It is my second least favorite song.
Is
My least
the God
favorite
That
is,
Failed?
no, I love that one. My
Okay.
least favorite is Through the Never.
Oh, again, still a good song. But yeah. Wherever I May Roam, it's edited down heavily to be a television theme song. Obviously, it's like a 1 minute version of the song, the intro, a chorus, right to the ending, right to the outro from the chorus. It's really funny. But good for them. And apparently, Slash will be a f upcoming subject of one episode. And so, Jason's love for hard rock and heavy metal. He's a really great ambassador. He's infamously seen moshing recently at Metallica at SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles. So he's apparently a real one. He loves the metals. And I really don't have anything else. There's been a lot of activity to start the year in the metal realms, but I don't really have anything super pertinent to us.
I will say a couple quick thing, couple quick housekeeping notes before we move on. This weekend, I'm going to be actually attending a couple of AHL hockey games in Rockford, Illinois. I will be seeing, as you listen to this, I will likely be watching the Rockford IceHogs taking on the Grand Rapids Griffins, so the Baby Blackhawks versus the Baby Red Wings, and then the following night it'll be the Baby Hawks versus the Baby Jets. I don't know who to root for in any of this. I'm going to root for fights. But and then next year we actually found out we are getting a minor league hockey team about 90 minutes, 2 hours away. So I'm actually really excited about that. Close enough to do an single night roadie, but I'm now an adult, so I'm going to do overnight roadies for those. Okay, and that is all of the hockey news I think I have for this week on this definitely not hockey podcast. In the meantime,
I was
let's.
gonna jump in and say, I feel like Nick at a hockey game is mild-mannered and eloquent and all the E words that are positive on this podcast. I feel like Nick will go to a real hockey game and turn into Alyssa Jones from Chasing Amy. Kick him in the
No.
nuts, ref!
No, I a quick okay. Quick story. And I'm not like this anymore. I've grown up. I have calmed down. I don't have my terrible ex-wife anymore. She wasn't, I apologize. She is not terrible. She is a wonderful human being, mostly. We were just terrible together. Stayed friends for a number of years after the divorce. Anywho, so I'm in Quad City. I'm in Moline, Illinois, watching my beloved Missouri River Otters take on the hated Quad City Mallards. Their goalie was our previous year's goalie, Jason Tapp, number 87. First goalie I ever saw wear 87. And I am screaming so loud at him and heckling him so loud between plays. They actually turned up the volume of the PA system for the music to drown me out. In a nearly sold out minor league arena, just me, my buddy, and his buddy, Buddha, or the Fat Man, as we called him. Of course, now Kevin resembles Buddha. So, well, anyway, it was quite a day. That's like my proudest moment as a heckler. I am now actually much more mild mannered because I don't need to get that out anymore. But yes, there was time. Okay, so anyway, let us set our watches back to 1980 early. I am not sure the exact date. We're going to go to Huntington Beach, California, which is, I believe, part of the Bay Area. Los Angeles?
Southern California, Los Angeles County, sir.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's technically Orange County, so it's below Los Angeles.
Oh, I thought it was kind of east north. And below. I don't know the geography.
We probably just made complete asses of ourselves. It's not the Bay Area.
Okay, so you got to get on the I-9 to get on the I-41. Start. What are you doing here? Anyway, so was there too much traffic? There's traffic, right? So there's too much traffic, so they had to stay where they were, I assume. So a couple of dudes get together by the names of Jeff Hanneman, Kerry King, and a third one, Dave Lombardo. In Nick's world, a couple is two or three. Come at me, bro. I will fight you on this forever. And they eventually hook up with another gentleman by the name of Tom Araya. One of the interesting things about this particular band, and what's always cool is you look back at these bands like the Beatles, Pete Best, the Poison, that dude that went back to Indiana, Metallica, Dave Mustaine, or Ron McGovney. You have these bands where like one dude jumped off ship right before they got on base. Slayer does not have that. Slayer is four guys for the first 25 years of their career. 25? No, longer than that. 30. First 30 years of their career, because Jeff doesn't leave the band as a touring member until 2011 after his spider bite and excessive alcoholism. But, I mean, think about that. That is awesome. I can't name another band that went through no lineup changes at all during their entire classic era, even the prehistoric era. So that's cool. So they get together, they start writing some songs, and of course it is the Satanic Panic days. There is nothing better than the Satanic Panic. And to quote one of the greatest poets of all time, Dave from Soundgarden, it is Dave, right? Not Soundgarden, Dave from, not Sonic Youth, god damn it, anyway. Who's the Misery people?
Dave Perner of Soul Asylum.
Not I was right, remotely, it was Dave.
Not even remotely close to being a Seattle band, but okay.
It's not about that. It's about getting the names wrong. Eat your own butt. To quote Dave Perner, the greatest poet of the 90s, theoretically, nothing draws a crowd like a crowd. And how do you draw the first crowd? You become, to quote the Three Amigos, infamous. So they write songs about infamous things, serial killers, horror shows, Nazis, and Satanism, lots of Satanism, and Die by the Sword, which is a song about literally nothing, and black magic, and they wear makeup. So it might be really hard to think about this, but Slayer went through an era where they overdid the guyliner. They went straight up RuPaul on the guyliner. Except RuPaul would have said that's not tasteful.
It wasn't super glittery, but Dragon Slayer is in fact, they keep trying to pretend that isn't real a real thing, but there are photos and promo photos that say Dragon Slayer. That infamous photo of them like, hey, and the blonde with the boobs out, which ended up being Jeff's wife, by the way.
He met her when he stuck his tongue down her throat on stage.
Yeah,
she was in the crowd.
Phenomenal. Guy was a legend. What can you say? Can't get away with that today, but
Shouldn't have been able to get away with that then. Let's call the thing what it is. But you know what? But you know what? Maybe he got away with it because she wanted it. Maybe there was some implied consent.
That also sounds terrible. God, she wanted it. Oh my God. Canceled before we even start the show. They did show up. You made a beautiful point here. They did show up fully formed. I just want to jump in and say, just to pull the cassette out, blow it, and put it back in. Slayer is from Huntington Park, easily confused with Huntington Beach. Huntington Beach is in Orange County. Huntington Park is near Los Angeles, is part of Los Angeles County.
You don't live in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Oakland, San Diego, or Sacramento, I don't care. If you're in Missouri and you don't live in Kansas City or St. Louis, I don't care.
Poor Fresno. Nick just doesn't give a shit. Goddamn.
No, I don't give it. You know who doesn't give a shit about Fresno either? The Karate fucking Kid. He did everything to stay out of Fresno. He even went to a death fight to not go to Fresno.
He really didn't want to go to Fresno. Fresno's Cobra Kai is Cobra Kai season 6 final season is coming out now, by the way, soon.
Nice. So,
continue with Slayer.
Yeah, moving back on track. We're at 32 minutes before we got to call this a day. Doing well. So, Brian Slagle comes to check them out while they are opening up for the band Bitch. You may recall that Bitch was on the first Metal Massacre record, unless I have completely screwed the pooch on the Huntington bark. So, he hears them play Phantom of the Opera by Iron Maiden. This may be hard to believe, but at the time we are talking about, there was not a Bruce Dickinson Iron Maiden yet. We are still in the Paul Di'Anno era. They play Phantom of the Park. He goes, wow. You know what you should do? You should record a song for my ongoing series, Metal Massacre 3. So they drop off a tape at his house or whatever. I don't know how they got it there. But real quick, let me just run through this list. We also did a Chaser on the first Metal Massacre, which Keefe was very kind and gifted me a copy of that. So here's what we have. You may recall the first Metal Massacre was full of a lot of fine bands that you have heard of, like Steeler, Bitch, Malice, Rat, Avatar, Cirith Ungol, Demon Flight, Pandemonium, Malice, and this other band people have heard of, I think, Metallica. So, moving on to Metal Massacre 3. Starts off strong. Probably could have stopped right here if I'm being quite honest. With Aggressive Perfector by Slayer. Moving into Riding in Thunder by Bitch. We recall them from just Metal Massacre, which is unfortunate, because actually they did a couple of quite great songs. Armageddon by Tyrant. I have no idea who that is. Piranhas, misspelled, by Medusa. Also don't know. Bite the Knife by Test Pattern. Blitzkrieg by Black Widow. Mrs. Victoria by Warlord. Let's Go All the Way by Virgin Steel. Did they show up in the wrong studio when they wrote that one?
Brian throw them a pity fuck by putting them on the record? Virgin Steel is not a bad band. They've been around
and he
for
put
a
it in
time.
The right place for that too, like, yes. Completely just tucked away.
The soft underbelly of Metal Massacre 3.
Let's see, moving on. Fire and Wind by Sexist. I don't know that that's really the name you want to go with nowadays, for sure. Especially not. Anyway. Hellbent by Snow White with a Z for an S, which is okay. The Kid by Marauder and Fist and Chain by Lemois. I can't speak French.
The Marauder, the hardcore band from New York, but LA's Marauder, who is a hard rock band, heavy metal band.
So, real quick, when you think of all those bands that are not named Slayer, one word comes to mind for me. What word is that for you?
Also rants.
That's two words. It's a phrase. I'll allow it. I would have gone with nobodies.
Ouch. Ouch. Virgin Steel is not nobody. Some of those, Black Widow had a little moment in the sun. You know, I'm sure I had some tapes somewhere with something.
Okay, how about this? Chilean miners. They're very underground.
Oh. That is a horrendous joke, sir.
Is it funny?
I mean, the little.
They were saved. They were saved.
They were saved. They didn't eat each other, like, alive. That's a wow.
Wow. That no, those were Brazilian soccer players. And
lot of lean meat. A lot of lean
well, not
muscle
at that
tone.
point in time, but I mean, they weren't killing
That's
them to
true.
eat them. They were like eating. It's you don't you got to slaughter the animal to eat it, or it's disgusting.
Oh, that's fair. All right.
All right, we are moving on to some great topics here. Let's move.
Right.
Speaking
In
of,
the along the aroma of Slayer.
oh yeah, completely. I mean,
Cannibalism.
oh yeah, totally. We're totally. Well, this is totally on brand.
Totally.
So they record this album, and Dave Lombardo absolutely hates the drum sound. They did this thing where they separated all the sounds. He absolutely hates it. I listened to this album today, and I think I listened to it two or three times. I didn't notice any disquality in the drum sound. We are in a pre-Mora sound era, and Mora sound, of course, is instrumental for the death metal sound, but the death metal drum sound isn't that different from the thrash metal drum sound or any extreme metal drum sound. And this one was recorded pretty damn well, in my opinion. I could hear all the drums. I could hear the double bass. I could hear it. So I don't know what he's on about.
I mean, Dave is a notorious perfectionist, and so in his mind, maybe it's worse sounding than it really is. Like he has a dysphoria about how bad it is. I would say this is very early days thrash. This is the second album from the eventual Big Four to come out of any band.
Yeah,
One year
because
before Ride the Lightning.
and the first Megadeth record doesn't come out until 85, or is it 80, 85? I think it's 85,
Maybe it's 83.
maybe 84. It's not 83.
And
It's at least a year behind Metallica.
we can look it up.
And then
But what
yeah,
I was gonna
so.
say was, it's early days. We've not even just the Mora sound. You don't have Alex Perialis at Pyramid Studios in upstate New York in Ithaca. You don't have Carl Kennedy, you know what I'm saying, from the Rods recording Metallica and Anthrax. You don't have these records. You just don't have it yet. You just don't have it. Very early days. And let's be fair, Slayer doesn't come. They have some bangers on this record, all time bangers in terms of songwriting. But the sound of Slayer is not quite here yet.
Completely agree. What the sound that is here though actually is used later and stolen by Euronymous.
I mean, everybody
This
copied the black. I
no, I
mean.
mean this guitar sound, if anybody listening to this podcast maybe watched the Lords of Chaos movie. Maybe I don't know the Venn diagram of our audience and the Lords of Chaos, extreme metal audience. I have to figure it's probably a hockey puck, like just one. But he, in the movie, Euronymous claims to have invented that sound, but this is the black metal guitar sound. It's not used till much later, but I'm gonna go with it. I'm sticking with it. I'm fighting the a fight, a fight.
You're gonna die on that hill. That's fair. I personally like the Lords of Chaos movie. Yes, it's obviously it's fictionalized in a lot of
I'd
ways.
love the movie. I didn't say I didn't like the movie.
I
I
throw
didn't say I
some.
liked it either.
I think it's a combination of things. It's a combination of things. You can't deny the early Slayer, and of course, like Slayer, saying you love Slayer and you imitated Slayer, you were inspired by Slayer, is like saying I'm a death metal band and I'm inspired by Cannibal Corpse. Well, duh. I was inspired by Chuck and Death. Of course you were. You had to be. Everyone was. So, it's no shame or no shade. I think if I was really analyzing the original Mayhem stuff, I would probably cite something else in terms of that guitar tone. But he did in fact claim Slayer as a sonic influence on the band.
Well, there you go. I'm not. I'm not gonna fault Mayhem, especially Mayhem with Euronymous and Death, or not and not Death, Death and Dead by any
Dead.
stretch. Pella was amazing, and
He could have been, who knows? Who knows how great he could have been? We'll never know.
correct. Well, I know how great he was on these terrible soundboard recordings that I've heard.
I mean, yeah. But imagine if he had gotten to do like
Oh, I know. I
a
know.
record
I
at
know.
Grieg Hallan or something. Like all these other proto early days first wave of Norwegian black metal. True Norwegian black metal. But Slayer, man, where do you wanna? You did a very nice setup. I think you probably had more to say, and I jumped in. But what do you think? Where do you do we want to just start with the record? We got like 25 minutes.
Let's just hit the track by track and see if there's anything left to sum up. I will lead this one. Starts off with Evil Has No Boundaries and like Nuke LaLoosh. Let me rephrase. Unlike Nuke LaLoosh, they wanted to announce their presence with authority, and they did. Nobody told the batter what was coming, and he didn't hit the bull. He doesn't get a free steak. This is a surprise. I mean, imagine if you are a nascent early adopter of Metallica, and the first thing you hear is Hit the Lights, which is cheesy as butt. Let's call a thing what it is. I mean, half of Kill 'Em All is cheesy as hell. And then you hear Evil Has No Boundaries. You know, the difference in quality of those two songs. And this is going to be the only time where Slayer outdoes Metallica in their entire careers. But they did on this track.
Well, I'm not sure about that because I don't know. We're gonna get to Rain and Blood, and Rain and Blood comes in between Ride the Lightning and Master of Puppets. So
Unfinished. Unfinished.
let's not go there yet. You're jumping way. You're That's a very bold statement to
You
make.
jumped.
No, you by saying that this is the only. I don't think this is ahead of. This is not ahead of Kill 'Em All.
No, I
It's
didn't
not,
say
and
Kill 'Em All is
nothing
ahead.
on here.
I
And no.
no. You misunderstood. I said it was ahead of Hit the Lights.
Of the
I
song Hit the
said,
Lights.
yeah, just the song Hit the
I
Lights.
guess. It's a good opener if you have no other thoughts. Again, like the sound is not quite there on the guitars, and I think these are very early days Slayer song inspirations where they sound a lot more like pre Dickinson Maiden, and they sound a lot like Priest, which is Kerry's favorite band. A lot like the two guitar Tipton and Downing Priest attack. There's a lot of impressive guitar work here on this song. And, it's faster than Metallica. It's more evil than scary, surely. And again, we don't have any other. There are some early proto-thrash albums at this time, but there's nothing else on this scope, except Metallica. We don't have anything else. These are the two first ones. We don't have anything else. I mean, like, people love to. There's. What is the first thrash song, and why is it Fast as a Shark? I guess. I guess. Maybe.
I'm just going to say Blondie moving forward. Now, the next track, we get into the Antichrist. I am of two minds on this particular song. It is an amazingly well written song. It is horribly performed. And all of the horribleness of the performance is focused on one gentleman in the band. It is the guy grabbing his nuts and putting a bullfighting pin, the same pins they put into the bull testicles. He's putting those into his testicles to get that Rob Halford scream, which he does not have. And if you go back to like some maybe somebody checked earlier a Slayer live record from 10 years later, while they're still playing this song, it is a much better version because Tom Araya is singing in his natural register. Great song. Look, they called the right pitch, but he hung the curveball.
I think the high scream of Tom deserves a conversation. Doesn't necessarily have to be right now. We can save it for Angel of Death. But that's a trademark of his. It's a trademark of Slayer, is that high, those high notes, either at the end of a chorus, at the beginning of a song, at the end of a verse, whenever Tom, at the end of a song, whenever Tom tries to just do that soaring scream, he's trying to do, Dickinson, he's trying to do whomever.
He's trying to hit all those guys. When he does it without like words, when it's not like, trying to sing in key like on this one, it's great. It's a great guttural primal scream. On this, it's just a failure. It's just a failure to launch.
Not unfair. I will also say there are a million songs after this called The Antichrist or Antichrist, and like we're good, everybody. We don't need any more.
We did not need this one, honestly. I mean,
Ouch.
Not that it's, I mean, I love the song, but I mean, we already had The Omen. We already had the, I mean, we had so much. Rosemary's Baby, you know. I'm sorry. The Antichrist mythology has been overused. Let's all stop it. Moving on into Die by the Sword. Here we have an immature band that has really not a whole lot to talk about. So, you know, live by the sword, die by the sword. They did not really say anything other than die by the sword, like over and over on this song. It's fun. They continue playing it for a long time, but this is an immature Slayer trying to fill out a record.
That being said, I love this song. And
So do I.
nothing be I will ne there nothing will ever replace Tom Araya's repetitive stage shtick where he goes, "People say the pen is mightier than the sword, but I say fuck the pen, 'cause you can die by the sword." And he always said it that exact spiel, more or less the same forever. And it's a banger. I know it's ridiculous and mean it's meaningless, but it's just an absolute rager. I love that song.
Moving on
Probably
into.
my favorite song on this whole record, actually, beside one on side two. Go ahead.
Well, fair enough. Moving on into more songs that are completely meaningless. Fight Till Death. I will say at least it's slightly more grammatically correct English than. I don't remember his name. The villain from Karate Kid Part 2. I want to say Kato, but it's not Kato. Sato is his uncle. Kato Kaelin?
No, it's wrong.
No?
And he showed up in Karate Kid, Cobra Kai,
I know.
whatever.
I watched. Bro, I watched it. I
Okay,
watched it.
yeah, it's yeah. Don't make an analogy if you can't remember the guy's name. Find yourself and continue your thought.
Actually, no. He did say, "Now we fight till death." So maybe he liked this album. I don't know. This song is not necessary. However, we're only at a 35-minute record, so you got to put something on the grooves.
Let's discuss for a second that basically Dave gets no writing credit on this album, Tom has no writing credits on this album, and every song is either Jeff and Carrie, Jeff or Carrie. Discuss.
Jeff and Carrie were the main lyricists for this band, and Jeff is the main lyricist of the Slayer songs you love. And Carrie was his friend.
Oh, it hurts. Yeah,
Am
I
I
mean, take.
wrong?
I mean, you're kind of wrong.
Like on a scale of 1 to 10. May okay,
The
look.
Jeff
It's
songs are definitely more of tens, and Carrie's are more like eights and sevens. But Carrie
like
also
saying this,
has.
man. Name a classic Gene Simmons song that he wrote after 1974.
Yeah, I don't have any.
Paul had plenty, Ace had some, but Gene did not have a classic song he wrote after 1974. Every good song he wrote after that was co-written, so there's no telling how much of it he wrote. Gene Simmons tapped out quickly. Not unfair. Truth Bomb. His best song after that was the shit Paul wrote for him. Look, I love Kerry King. Kerry King is a great nut bar guitar player. He is Tom Morello before Tom Morello was Tom Morello. Just out there. Just whatever he's doing, he doesn't even know. He actually read, I read an interview with him once where he talked about reading the transcriptions of his solos. And there he's like, "No, it's never even close because I'm so out there." Look, you know, he's the number five hitter. Carrie's the number four hitter. Tom's batting eighth.
You are just, whoa, swinging a big hammer to start this series.
I am like using a lot of great baseball metaphors, and I think I deserve some recognizione for that.
I
Moving
guess.
on to Metal Storm Face the Slayer. Completely have no recollection of this song.
I love this song. It's got a fantastic string skipping riff that reminds me a lot of the early Maiden stuff. And yeah, it's a killer song. I think it's probably underrated. People probably don't talk enough about how good this song is to me.
Entirely possible since I forgot it. Is this the one that sounds just like Harvester of Sorrow?
Except super fast?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because I'm going to say Metallica ripped this off for Harvester of Sorrow.
It's possible. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, Metallica just accidentally wrote these riffs that are so much like other bands. No, they.
I mean, "Come As You Are" by Nirvana accidentally sounds exactly like 80s by Killing Joke, so I don't know.
Look, I'm going to quote Paul Stanley on this one. It's okay to steal. Just make sure you're stealing a diamond and not a piece of glass. Hotter Than Hell is him rewriting Free. Deuce is Gene rewriting Bitch. It happens. It's fine. Do it. Although, maybe don't steal an intro riff for your intro riff. Maybe don't do that. We're going to flip the record over to Black Magic. Again, we have a young band dropping riffs, writing lyrics that you don't need. But Tom's got to say something, because these lyrics are not good. There's actually probably, apart from the Antichrist, really none of the lyrics on this record are any good.
That's fair. Musically, this is the second or third best song on the whole album, and they continue to obviously play this for a long time, usually tacked on to the end of another song, and they do like half of it, but officially 4 minutes long. I love this song. Again, I accept that these lyrics are cheesy. They're not fully formed yet. They don't have their guitar sound together yet. They didn't make the record they felt they were able to make yet, but three songs on this album that lasted for 40 something years as a band, you know, similar to Kill 'Em All, but not as good quality.
No shame in what they have written here. They haven't always recorded it well. They wrote this is the sum up. Let's move on. Tormentor, another Rifftoberfest. I mean, they're just ready to slam beers and find chicks in the crowd, which I'm shocked that there were any women at any of these shows, to be quite honest.
Yeah, the LA shows definitely had some female fans. Tormentor infamously was the original name chosen by Creator, who named themselves for this song.
Too bad Creator sucks.
Oh my God, you blasphemer! Stop it!
Jehovah, Jehovah! I don't think it should be I don't think it should be blasphemy just saying Jehovah. All I said to my wife was that fish was good enough for Jehovah. Blasphemer! Moving on into the final command. What many people may not recall in this day and age is that in the 80s, we lived under the complete threat of nuclear war every single day. And the final command is when you push the button, or as you turn the keys on the football, as we learned what the button was called later on in life, which is one of my favorite things about the Cold War, is that the button was literally referred to as the football. Another great song. It's not a song that lasted forever into Slayer. It's very rare to have a lot of songs off your debut record hanging on for a long time. You have got to have a debut record like Kiss, where 6 of the 10 songs are abject classics. Of course, diminishing returns quickly hit with that band. And, you know, Megadeth has, what, 2 or 3 off Killing Is My Business they still play. One of them is The Mechanics, which they should not play. And this is just, look, this is a salary cap crunch, man. Eventually there's too many songs and not enough spots.
The best thing about the final command, it is mercifully short.
It is 2:32, which is a perfect crossover thrash. This is almost crossover thrash before that was a thing, because Slayer doesn't have their nimblosity yet. They don't have that really cool riffing that pretty much all the big four were really, really good at. The very precise surgical riffs where you would trust Jeff Hanneman to pull out your appendix if you were on a plane. If I'm on a plane and Slayer is there and my appendix is about to burst, I'm going to ask Jeff Hanneman to do it, because I think he's got me. I think he's got the hands to do it.
I'm going to say, I'm pretty sure it's Hanneman, but also...
Probably is.
You're using big words, and I'm not that smart, so I'm going to take it as a sign of disrespect.
No, whoa! Does he offer us insult? No, he offers you food.
That was a family-friendly portion of a... bit from the 40-Year-Old Virgin I cannot repeat the rest of on this program.
My God, I have not seen that movie in a long time. Moving on into Cryonix. Bye, Onyx.
Oh, it hurts. It hurts so much.
Does it hurt so good? Because it should.
I mean, it's maybe thematically it was borrowed by a lot of other bands, including Megadeth later. But
and Metallica, Trapped Under Ice.
Yeah, true.
Finishing it off with Show No Mercy. Man, how often do you write a title track that just doesn't land?
This is one of them.
This is one of them. I do not recall this song either. And, but I mean, if you, let's just quickly look at that cover. It is the cheesiest goddamn Satan I have ever seen. Standing underneath Show No Mercy in the cheesiest flamey font I have ever seen. This looks like it came directly out of Jeff Hanneman's fourth grade notebook. Except for the Slayer part. The Slayer logo
is eternal mm-hmm. in the crest with the swords. The manticore looking Satan with the cape and the sword has endured somehow.
You left out the loincloth.
He's got a loincloth. He's got some killer boots.
He's got thigh highs.
He's very sexy Satan. But
he's like Conan. Yeah. The diabolical.
I mean, if you were like, I have to make the most satanic and evil thing, and did Venom already come out with black metal at this point, or they're just literally, they didn't think to do just a very simple Slayer. We've both read the Slayer book by DX Ferris, who I would like to make an entree to come on this show as a guest. I'd like to get him. He's busy writing a new book right now, but he's talked a lot in his book about the Slayer artwork and the challenges they had agreeing on artwork and what landed and what didn't. One of the highlights of the book, if you love Slayer. And like, I get that this, like, taking it as it is cheesy. For 1983, this was like, oh my, this is so evil. Wow. But it's cheesy. It's certainly more evil than every other record.
It's not more evil than Number of the Beast.
Well, no, but they had Derek Riggs, which nobody else had. So, like,
I mean, okay, you know what? That is not fair. That is not fair. That is like comparing Wayne Gretzky to anyone else that ever played hockey. It's not a fair comparison.
I understand, but
Wayne Gretzky has more assists than anyone else in the NHL history has points and games.
Okay, I think it's not as bad retrospectively as it probably
was. Better than I thought it was bad in the 90s.
I always love the Slayer logo, and I don't.
I love the logo. It's just the Satan looks like he.
I don't hate.
I don't
want to
say anything rude. I mean, I don't want to say anything cancelably rude.
Let go. Well, no, don't. Please don't. We have enough problems week in and week out not getting
this canceled. This is a bodybuilding, oiled up Satan ready to go to a bodybuilding competition tomorrow.
All the bodybuilders used to drink the milk, and I said milk is for babies. We drink beer in Germany, Austria.
We are here to pump you up. Most people say you drink protein. In Austria, we do Dianabol, Decadurobolin, and methyl testosterone. It makes us big and not whiny babies. So anyway, moving on. As for a debut record, Slayer to me is not one of those, and I love Slayer, so I'm sorry, this comes from love. Slayer is not one of those bands that you are not going to do the Led Zeppelin 10 with Slayer. You are not going to sit down in your house and listen to all their records in a row. I don't think most people would even listen to Slayer if they could not put it on 10 in terms of volume. Slayer benefits from decibels. Slayer at 110 decibels is the greatest thing in the world. Slayer at 35 decibels when you're not bothering your downstairs neighbor gets a little squiffy. And here we are. We have a nascent band. They have written some amazing songs. They have written some other songs. Because you have to have an album's worth of songs to have an album. And as a debut by a band who had no idea how to record anything because they had never really been in the studio, they didn't really do demos like other bands did, so they weren't paying for studio time. There's no Life Till Show No Mercy by Slayer like Metallica's No Life Till Leather. So they did really well for a completely inexperienced band. And is it a 30-30-30 record? Yeah.
I'll also
run out of the gate.
I will tell you that you absolutely hit the nail on the head there. We didn't mention produced by the band themselves, who should not have been producing anything.
Correct.
And Brian Slagle, who I think had not really produced much else besides this.
Executive production credit. Well, he handed him money. Slayer.
It's not accurate because his book talks
accurate.
About him.
I realize Slayer paid for these sessions. They financed this album to be on a label, which makes no sense to me.
Well. You know, DIY days, basically. I also want to say there's probably a band dynamic here where, you know, we can get into this later when problems arise. Lombardo is significantly younger than Jeff and Kerry, and Tom is older, but still has no agency in the band much, except for doing the vocals and reading lyrics by somebody else and playing very basic bass stuff. But, let's, you know, Evil, three blueprint banger songs for all time in metal, and the speed. Like, you, the ability to play fast and accurately cannot be overlooked here, because at, like, as musicians, these guys are on par or ahead of Metallica at this point. You know, maybe James a better rhythm guitarist in general, but, like, you know, you can't overlook the fact that this record's important, and it was, it set the standard for the speed that everybody else would be like, oh, we have to get faster. Look at these guys. They're so fast and Evil. And I don't think you can just throw that away and be like, ah, that's not important. It's super important for 83. Now, it becomes much more important in two more years when they're two or three more years when they're a drastically better band. But for the first record, not too shabby. And again, a lot of bands would love to have a debut album with three classics on the most legendary metal label ever.
Completely agree with all of that. If you hit three classics in your first go, I think you've done pretty well. Metallica, I mean, I love Metallica. I love Kill 'Em All. But if I'm being honest, like genuinely honest, like you and me talking and nobody's listening, they don't have three classics on Kill 'Em All. They might have two.
I disagree, but okay, not for now. We're going to fight more about that another time.
Fair enough. I have nothing else to say this week. You?
It is your. I have nothing else to add. Go Slayer. More to come.
All right.
You take us home, sir.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you have made it this far, you are amazing. You are awesome. You are sausage tops. I don't know what that means. If you have made it this far, clearly you're enjoying our witty banter. You are enjoying everything. Or perhaps that you are just somebody that's here week after week. If you could, thank you very much. If you could just like, subscribe, interact. Those are the biggest things you can do to help us grow. We are not part of a giant network. We are not part of, you know, we are not celebrities. We are just guys that love metal, have spent way too much time researching metal and listening to these things and trying to bring you a bigger picture on these albums you may love or may not have heard before. If that is a thing for you, please give us an 18 to 24 month tryout as a subscriber. Or just, you know, subscribe and whatever. But thank you very much for getting this far. As we always say, this has been the Glacially Musical Podcast. It does not play in Peoria, but no doubt Slayer has been to the Carver Arena, burned that son of a bitch down, and pissed on its ashes.
They also played the Madison Arena 22 years ago this weekend.
The hell's the Madison Arena?
The Madison Theater in Peoria.
The hell's that?
It's a theater in Peoria.
Okay.
Slayer, Hatebreed, and Diecast. All right. Peace out, sir.
Later.